The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. We're interrupting a fairly heated conversation in order to speak to you.
I heard just the back end of the heated conversation, and it certainly sounds an interesting one, and I think a controversial one.
An important one.
I wish you guys luck as you continue this debate.
Well, that's what we do, and I think
it will continue for some time.
I think it's important to be able to have these discussions. It's been made public only now that Israel has approved the provision of armored vehicles to the Palestinian Authority security forces that were apparently delivered 4 months ago. What's the significance of this approval by Israel?
Well, I think there are a few significances, and it's interesting. The facts are that these are 10 light armored vehicles that were delivered upon request from the United States, even though, obviously the relationship with the United States and between the United States and the Palestinian Authority is very, very tense right now. These armored vehicles were delivered 4 months ago and apparently were ordered as long ago as 9 months ago, and were approved by the Israeli government. And at the time, Prime Minister Netanyahu, as well as then Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman, were involved in authorizing the transfer of these vehicles. Apparently they came through Jordan, crossing over at the Allenby Bridge with Israel's, approval. And of course, cooperation. And now that it has come to light, there's been quite a few amongst particularly representatives of people who live within the West Bank communities who have strongly criticized the transfer of military equipment to the Palestinian Authority forces because of the fact that there is a notion that says that, you know, some of those forces have been involved in aiding terror attacks, have been involved in terror attacks. And there is a feeling amongst some people that this act really endangers Israelis rather than helps them. So I think it's important just to try to unravel some of the confusion. There are a lot of anomalies here. There is no consistency. And what we see on the face of things is not necessarily what's going on behind the scenes. And I think that this is a case where that clearly comes to light, because on the one hand, openly, the Palestinian Authority are at loggerheads with the U.S. administration. We spoke only yesterday about this issue of the Bahrain conference and the U.S. Administration planning to unveil parts of the proposed peace plan. And already, even before the invitations have been issued, the Palestinian Authority is saying, we're not going to turn up. We don't want to be there. And yet there is going on behind the scenes things like these armored vehicles, which have been ordered from the United States, which have been delivered, obviously, with the agreement of the U.S. administration. It would surprise me if the president himself hasn't been at least advised and made aware of this particular issue. So, you know, behind the scenes, there is some cooperation going on, and it's clear that the Palestinian Authority has a certain amount of reliance that they have to place on the U.S. administration, even though openly they are very much criticizing the U.S. administration and being very uncooperative in many things that the U.S. administration is trying to do openly. So I think that that's an interesting dilemma, anomaly that's going on, but which when we see the reality of things going on behind the scenes, we can see that, you know, whatever positions are being presented for public consumption is not necessarily the reality of what's going on deep down where the tachlis happens. And then we look at the relationship with the Israeli government, where at the moment there is a huge crisis because the Israeli government has been withholding some of the tax money which is being paid to terrorists. And as a result of that, the Palestinian Authority has refused to accept any money at all. And this has put the Palestinian Authority into a huge economic crisis. But they are insistent that they won't take money, even though whatever money the Israelis are prepared to give them would help their economic situation substantially. They're still not prepared to do that, and they've been threats that the Palestinian Authority will not cooperate with Israel from a security point of view. And so, you know, how do we then square the circle in terms of understanding why Israel would approve the delivery of these armored vehicles and why the Palestinian Authority would even turn to Israel and accept their approval when they are openly trying to negate Israel's control over at least their financial affairs and perhaps many other things that are going on. And why would Israel even have it in their interest to have these armored vehicles delivered? And so, you know, we've once again got this very, very strange situation that even though Israel has a certain enemy in this form of Hamas or Hamas or Fatah in the Palestinian Authority area, that enemy is still potentially much better than the alternative enemy that might come in to take their place in the event that they were to go away. So Israel is clearly showing its interest in propping up the Palestinian Authority administration of Mahmoud Abbas by delivering these armored vehicles and trusting that even though these armored vehicles do have a certain attack capability and they seem to have weapons mounted on them and things like that. So it's not a purely defensive vehicle as such. It does seem to have an attack capability as well, even though Israel is effectively delivering weapons to the Palestinian Authority. There is a certain trust that says that those weapons are not going to be used against Israeli targets. And on the contrary, those weapons and those armored vehicles are going to be used to try somehow to preserve a certain peace. And the Palestinian Authority certainly, at least in the past, has been responsible for making sure that terror attacks do not get carried out against Israel and has really been active in doing so. So we have to, you know, give credit where credit is due. And, you know, it's not because they feel that they feel sorry for Israel and they want to protect Israelis in any way. It's because it's in their interests to make sure that Israel is not attacked, because the punitive measures that Israel might take against them as a result of that would be more damaging to them than allowing the terror attack to take place. So there's an interesting symbiosis happening here, none of which is really understandable, but somehow, somewhere, somebody kind of has figured this out that this is the right thing to do. And of course, these vehicles are being delivered. What this means going forward is nothing at all, because, you know, we've learned that we can't necessarily expect things in the future based on things that have happened yesterday or 4 months ago or in the past. So this is just a case in point, a decision that was made on the at the moment, which served a purpose. What will happen the next day if that same decision was to be brought again for consideration? The decision might be exactly the opposite. Who knows?
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. The Knesset has changed some of its procedures to equalize the treatment of partners of same-sex couples who are members of the Knesset. What are the changes, Anthony?
Well, I mean, the changes are even just very simple things like changing the forms that Knesset members have to fill out in order to give details about their families and about their spouses and about their partners. In fact, this whole issue came to light when former Ranana Mayor Eitan Ginsburg, who's one of the new members of Knesset representing Kahol Lavan, went to take up his seat. Eitan Ginsburg is an openly gay. He has been openly gay even while serving as mayor of Ranana. He has a spouse and he has children. So he is, you know, a family in every sense of the word. And when it came to filling out the forms that he needed to fill out in order to give his details to the administrative department of the Knesset, he wasn't satisfied that the forms adequately represented him and his family situation. And this was brought to the attention of the Knesset Director General, Albert Sakharovich, and he instructed all department heads within the Knesset administrative area to change their policies and to change their documentation in order to try to accommodate those members of Knesset who are involved in same-sex relationships, so that everybody should have equal rights and opportunities and have the opportunity to fill out the forms and to get the benefits that are the same as every other heterosexual couple. Interestingly, in this particular Knesset session, out of a total of 120 members, there are 5 members who are openly gay, who are involved in same-sex relationships and who are open about it and have you know, no reason to feel ashamed or to feel that they need to hide it in any way. And so this is, I think, an interesting mirror of Israeli society. And it's just one of those things that we like to mention over and over again, particularly to members of the LGBT community, LGBTQ. I think there are other letters that I probably forgot to add in as well, and I don't mean to offend anybody. But to those members of that community, many of whom ironically are supporting BDS and are supporting anti-Israeli activities, and we certainly saw that in the Eurovision with the Finnish delegation, who are also openly gay and whatever, supporting Palestine and wheeling out their Palestinian flags. And I was just wondering to myself whether they had thought for a moment about how they, as gay people, would be accepted by the Palestinian Authority and by a state of Palestine who clearly, you know, does not have this as a part of their policies, and they are very unaccommodating where same-sex relationships are concerned. So for me, it was interesting to see that the Knesset officially has changed its policies, and it now reflects the fact that Israeli society has no issue with same-sex couples, albeit that there is very much a dilemma in terms of how our religion views these same-sex relationships. But that's a debate that's going on in Israel right now, and that will continue to go on. And I certainly encourage people listening to engage in that debate, because I think it's a very important one.
Finally, Anthony, tonight is Lag BaOmer. What happens in Israel? What are the traditional activities in Israel for Lag BaOmer?
Well, it's weird that Lag BaOmer represents different things to different people, right? Because for some people it means having a shave and having a haircut. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing. To other people it means finally being able to get married, because it is quite traditional over the period of the Omer until at least Lag BaOmer that weddings are not allowed and people don't shave or don't have their hair cut and observe certain mourning rituals which relate historically to events that took place during this period of the Omer, particularly in the days of Rabbi Akiva. And so Lag BaOmer for some people means that. But of course it does mean lighting bonfires and having a kumzitz and getting out and about and, you know, doing those kind of activities, being out in the natural environment. Unfortunately, we are expecting some very, very severe weather conditions both tonight and tomorrow. And so the Israeli firefighting service has come out begging people not to light any large fires. Many of the communal activities where communal fires are being lit to mark Lag BaOmer, they're actually scaling down the fires. They've said that they might light a small fire. In some cases, they've even lit Lag BaOmer fires a day earlier in order not to get involved in the very, very severe, very dry and hot conditions that are expected over the next few days. Temperatures are supposed to rise to over 30 degrees in some places, 35 and 37 degrees. And over the next few days, we're expecting 40-degree days. Across Israel. So the weather is going to be very severe, and I think the fire services, who are generally stretched at this time of the year and already are having to deal with issues along the Gaza border, and obviously have to be available there in the event that there's any uptick in the aggression that we've seen at the Gaza border, now also having to deal with these very, very extreme weather conditions. So people have been asked to be very, very cautious about lighting fires, not to allow them to get out of control, to try and keep the fires as small as possible. And so hopefully people will still be able to celebrate Lag BaOmer in the traditional way without necessarily endangering not themselves, not any property or not any land where fires might get out of the way. But certainly it is traditional around Lag BaOmer for all bits of wood to be collected up, building sites, kids going around building sites, collecting scraps of wood that they're going to be throwing on their Lag BaOmer fires. You know,
Anthony, I was in Israel once. I saw some kids collecting a couch that landed up on a bonfire.
So this is also the time that you can get rid of things like old couches. If you don't know what to do with them, well, you can donate them to some kid's Lag BaOmer fire, and your couch will probably be dealt with. And you know, I've been quite amused by seeing kids walking around the streets with supermarket trolleys, going around finding bits of wood, filling up their trolleys with all these bits of wood, collecting it up. Then they go and camp out on a piece of land somewhere so that they can book their space for the Lag BaOmer fire. So there's a lot of tradition that goes around Lag BaOmer. Of course, it's a celebration. Of course, it's an opportunity to get out and get together and just, you know, celebrate some of our traditions. But of course, it should be done done with caution. So we hope that, people will adhere to the rules and to the recommendations that have been laid down by the local authorities and by the firefighting service in particular.
There we go. Sorry.
Anthony, if you come home and discover some of your clothes are missing, it's your wife.
it's not the kids in the neighborhood.
It's your wife who may be getting rid of some of those t-shirts.
I will tell you that we have been, it comes after Pesach, and usually Pesach is the time when we clean out those kinds of things. But absolutely, this is an opportunity for anything to be cleaned out, and who knows. So Lagbom is always a great time, and everybody does enjoy it, and all of a sudden we see people cleaning themselves up and having a haircut and shaving their beards off. We look forward to enjoying Lagbom, and hopefully you guys will do the same.
So half your clothes is in fact chometz.
Exactly. More than half.
It is 8:01. Apologies, your news is a slightly late. Anthony Rai, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, same time, same place.